Well, I'm tickled to be here. Now, we came up from Georgia. Now, I know some of you are thinking, man, I had to drive all the way over there to, you know, to the meet. Well, you know, we came about 600 miles, you know, with our banjo on our knee from North Georgia to be here. So, I'm kind of tickled about that. And the only reason that I got an opportunity to do this is just a relationship with Jim. Jim and his location over there are clients of mine that where I'm doing a little bit of training. I'm retired now. I'm trying to back down, but about 3 days a week, I still putz around and do a little training, and most of that on the internet. I like that. I can do that in my underwear at home. You know, that's a lot more fun. But Jim asked me to come. He called me a few months ago, and he asked me to come and be a part of the meeting. And you know, I said, well, gosh, you know, meetings like that, I mean, do you really want a sales guy? I mean, I know these guys, you know, if they can't get CEUs, they don't care. They don't want to listen to me. And he said, oh yeah, they'll enjoy you. Come on. So he convinced me that I needed to come on and be a part. And of course, I'm glad I did. If all it was just to drive up here and get Harry's barbecue, you know, that was worth the trip. That dude knows something about cooking, doesn't he? So that was excellent. But I brought my wife with me. You might see her going around snapping a few pictures. We try to keep up our website, so I hope that's not too much of a distraction either. But we decided that we would try to put together a loop and make a nice trip out of this. We've got kids over in Kentucky. I'm originally from Kentucky. Everybody's got a cross to bear, so I, you know, just overlook that. But we swung through Lexington over the weekend and spent some time with kids and family there. And when we leave here today, we thought we would try, while we were here, try to pump a little money into the West Virginia economy. So we're leaving here and we're going down to Elkins. Anybody in that around that area, Davis and Elkins College? But anyhow, you know where that is. And we're going to go stay at Graceland tonight and go to the American Mountain Theater. We thought that would be interesting. So we're going to try to pump a few bucks into your economy before we head back south to Georgia. Where we are up in North Georgia, Ellijay, Georgia, up in the mountains, is similar. Our mountains are not quite as high as what you got here, but similar to what you've got here. So I love that terrain. as we get started this morning, let me just tell you a short little story to kind of set up what I want to talk to you about. One thing, and I bet I get an amen for this, you notice I do not have a PowerPoint clicker. No slides. We're just going to have a conversation this morning. So I hope you'll enjoy that a little bit. And I'm the only guy on the program that don't know nothing about bugs and chemicals and that sort of thing. So even though I spent 20 years in your industry, I've always tried to stay on the sales and customer service side of things. So don't ask me any technical questions. But there's a short little story I want to tell you. I don't know if you've ever spent much time in Houston, but Houston can be a pretty rough area. And there's a story told about a fellow there who was a detective, and he went out one day to investigate a murder, which they do quite regularly there. And so the guy gets out there and he finds out it's a domestic homicide where apparently the wife had killed the husband. And so he goes out to do his due diligence and all his investigation, and he checks out the crime scene, does all that kind of stuff that those guys do. In the meantime, they had taken the wife and she's down in the county lockup, and so she's not on the premises. And so he gets there and he looks around and he finds that where the body was laying there, there were 15 bullet holes in this guy. And so he finishes up his work, he gets down, he goes and he says, look, I want to stop by the lockup and I want to go see her and do a short interview with her. So he walks in and she readily admits that she had killed her husband. And he said, well, look, he said, I just got one more question for you, and that is, why did you shoot the Joker 15 times? She said, because that's all the bullets I had. Now, the reason that I like to tell that little story is just simply for the fact that sometimes salespeople, now I know we got a mixed bag of folks here. I know we got some folks that own some of the companies here. I know we've got some people that are technicians / salespeople. We might have some dedicated salespeople here that's all you do is sell. Maybe there's a sales manager in the group. But regardless, you know, basically as a group, when we end up out there selling, we end up like the commissioner yesterday who kind of, you know, didn't take him long to get up here and get to the podium and get on stage and get to talking. And a lot of times we'll go out there when we're selling and we'll shoot somebody 15 times with different features and benefits and parts of our presentation, where maybe one or two well-placed shots would have been quite adequate, and we'd have done just as well to do that. And so what I want to do is I want to kind of address that today, because I've spent 42 years, and I'm just saying this kind of for street cred with you. I'm not trying to brag at all, but I've spent basically 42 years, all my working life, in sales or sales management or sales training or sales coaching and that arena, that sort of thing. And 20 of that with, and don't hold this against me, but 20 of that with Rollins and the Orkin Company. So I know enough about your business to be dangerous. But I've spent a lot of time in three different industries, and I just find that it's basically the same in most places that I go, that most companies spend most of their training resources, and they don't have a whole lot. You know, training's always the first thing to get cut, and that's happened to me at different times, and I've had to either relocate or move to a different position because all of a sudden, you know, the funding dried up because training got cut. But what we tend to do is we tend to spend the available resources and the available monies for training on stuff like, you know, how to give a better presentation and how to put together these features and benefits and all that kind of stuff, so that our folks end up, or we, when we're doing the selling, we end up showing up, hey, I appreciate you giving us a call. My name's Doug. Let me show you what I got. And then off we go. And we go through and we rattle off our presentation and we tell folks what we've got. So if you want a title, I guess, to the conversation that I want to have with you today, it would go back to 1967, the year I graduated from high school. So you can do the math and you can sort of figure that out. But you might remember the movie Cool Hand Luke. And, you know, the famous quote in there is, "What we have is failure to communicate." And now I don't quite talk that bad, but I understand. I talk fast, and I'm from Georgia, but I talk fast, and I got a lot of South in my mouth. So I hope you'll not miss some of the things that I had to say. But that's kind of what I want to talk about is basically kind of the basic communication skills. I'm not going to come in here today and try to give you a Zig Ziglar sales seminar. There's too many good folks out there that are providing, you know, outstanding training and coaching and that sort of thing. But I want to bring it down. I'm going to tell you why that's what I do now as a retired guy is work in just that arena of just basic common sense, which is another word we don't hear a lot of or enough of nowadays. Communication skills, face-to-face skills, telephone skills, and so it all starts. And I'll take you back kind of to where it started for me. As a fifth grader in 1960, I come in from school one day, and my mama gives me a package of mail. Now, fifth graders don't get a whole lot of mail, but she said, "Something came in the mail today with your name on it." And so I open this thing up, and it's a solicitation from a greeting card company. Some of you as kids may have gotten these things, and they want you to go out and sell their cards. Now, here it is. This is summertime in 1960 in Louisville, Kentucky, where I grew up. And I mean, I never sold anything, don't care. It never was on my radar screen. I'm a typical kid, just, you know, doing my thing. And so I open this thing up, and they want me to sell Christmas cards. Now, it's July, and they want me to sell Christmas cards. And so I flip through that real quick and get ready to lay it down, and I see there's a prize catalog in there. So I pull out the prize catalog, and I flip through 3, 4, 5 pages, and boom, it hit me. There it was. Something that I was really interested in. Something that, as meager as our family's means was at the time, that I knew I wouldn't get otherwise, and that was back then, 1960. You might remember, if you're from my generation, you might remember when those three-speed Schwinn bicycles, those English racers, first came out. And this one had the green fenders with the silver pinstripes, and man, I mean, I was fired up. So all of a sudden, although I'd never sold anything as a kid, didn't care anything about that, all of a sudden, I'm a salesman. And I tell my mama, I said, "Look, I'm going to do this. I want that bicycle, and I know Daddy can't, you know, afford to get me that kind of bicycle. I'm going to go after that." She said, "Well, how much you got to sell?" I said, "Well, this thing here says I got to sell 35 boxes of these Christmas cards." Now, these weren't, I lived in a little, right when suburbia was just beginning to start there, little subdivision of about 400 little two-bedroom houses that were springing up, and you may have grown up in a little subdivision like that. And so all these folks were blue-collar folks, and we didn't, you know, nobody had any money, and And these were not your dime store variety cards. I was going to say, Walmart or Kmart. Well, there wasn't any Walmart or Kmart. It was S.S. Kresge back then, you might remember. And so these weren't the cheap cards. These were the kind that were, fairly expensive. I don't remember exactly what they cost, but fairly expensive. And they would be the ones that they would imprint the family's name on, mom, dad, Skip, Sis, and Sparky kind of thing, so that you'd send your Christmas cards out. So didn't really fit my neighborhood, but I thought, I'm going to give this thing a shot because all I could see was the prize. I mean, I didn't care anything about the cards or, I hate to say it, but didn't really care much about my customers at the time. But all I was focused on was 35. I mean, that was the number every morning. And I just, So mom said, well, I'll help you out best I can. She said, I'm sure I'll buy a box and maybe your grandma will buy a box, but you're going to be on your own if you want to do this. And so I just sort of, decided to do it. And I had no idea how tough it was going to be, but I picture yourself as a 10-year-old kid, and you're stumbling around knocking. I knocked on all 400 doors in that subdivision in July to talk to people about Christmas cards. I got sweat running down. Back then, very little air conditioning, very few televisions, so, a lot of screen doors, and you hear a lot of radios in there. Folks are home, but they ain't coming to the door. And, it's spy out there, and they look, and they see a little kid with this, stuff under his arm, and they either know he's either selling something or he's begging for something. So I've tried to block a lot of that out of my mind. Some of the stuff I can't even repeat that I heard, but more than once I heard, son, don't you know it's July? What do you mean, Christmas card? And no, thank you. No, we don't want none. No, go away. I ain't coming to the door. All that kind of stuff. And then it's kind of like the kid that walks in one day and he sees this room full of manure. And most everybody is, just trying to avoid that and walk away. And he goes right and he starts digging in. Everybody says, well, what in the world are you doing? He said, man, with all this manure, I know there's a pony in here somewhere. And for me, it was that same kind of thing. Is even though I kept getting these negatives and kept getting these no's, I knew there was a pony in there somewhere. And that pony was that 3-speed Schwinn. And I had my heart set on that thing. And I was going to get it. And so lo and behold, to make the story a little shorter, about 6 weeks later, I had putched around and gone through and knocked on all those, taken all that abuse, and I did it. I sold 35 boxes of those expensive Christmas cards. I found out at an early age. I had no idea. I'm a pretty dadgum good salesman as a fifth grader. And a couple of months later, it's like the middle of October, I come in from school one day, and Mama says, a freight line came by here today and left a box for you. And I knew, man, as soon as that happened, I knew what that was. Now, I said freight line because that was pre-UPS days too, So the freight line comes and brings this thing, and I tear that box up. It was tall and skinny cardboard box, and when I saw those fenders coming up out of that box, man, we had Christmas early that year. And I think back every time, since then that I've been trying to sell something or coach somebody to sell something, is that I just found out that if your desire is where it needs to be, and if you really want that prize, whatever it is for you and for your business and whatever it is that you're selling, that it just makes a world of difference. And that's, as long as I stayed focused on that, I found out things would work pretty well. And so what happened to me is I went on and grew up like a normal kid, went to school, got out, went to University of Louisville, and I went there for 3 years, and the Vietnam War kind of interrupted that. And so I went out and did a little service. I didn't go overseas, but I was in a reserve unit, so I had to go to California and do all of that kind of stuff. And so I was out of school long enough that I just never got back. So I didn't finish college. I don't have a college degree. And as I thought about that and thought about what I was going to do with my life, I would start to think back to that little sales adventure of those Christmas cards. Because in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm seeing buddies of mine going and spending 4 years in college, and they get out of college, and the jobs that they got, they didn't bowl me over with the kind of income they were making or the kind of job. But what I saw was that with sales, I got a little bit of control over what I'm doing. That I can go out there. It's almost like being an entrepreneur and being self-employed. I can go out there and I can go after a goal and go after an objective and then boom, achieve it, and I can get the prize. And so I was offered a sales job, and I decided, to the dismay of my family, most of the family said, you going to be a salesman? You've been through that if you ever had a pure selling job. And so I went into the commercial food sales business in my early 20s and spent 8 or 9 years in that business. And then for from there went on, just for background, went on from there into the financial services business and was there 12 years, was self-employed there, and then went to work for Rollins and for Orkin and started off as a branch manager trainee and went through all of that sort of mess. Some of you went through that program. I know there's a lot of roots, Orkin roots, that run through a lot of companies and run pretty deep. And somebody told me yesterday, said, man, you must be pretty tough if you stuck with Orkin for 20 years. He said, I couldn't make it but six. So I get that. I understand that. So I went through that and was a branch manager and a region sales manager and did all of those kind of functions and then went on and spent most of my time, 10 or 12 years, in their training group and in sales training and customer service training. And that's kind of been my focus. And retired 3.5 years ago, and now I'm Robinson Training Solutions, and I'm it. I'm just a one-man show and trying to limit what I do to 3 days a week and just sort of trying to help some folks and impart some ideas and some things that I picked up and learned over the years. So the way that relates to this topic of communicating is that what I found, regardless of what industry that I worked in, was that as I mentioned earlier, that there was just not a lot of effort and a lot of resources put into just basic communication skills. And so I want to talk about that for a few minutes this morning, so you'll sort of see that after all this time that I've kind of come full circle back around, and now most of what I talk about today are about those communication basics that work just as well for a technician who's trying to do a little upselling or a little cross-selling as it does for a full-time salesperson who's out there pounding the pavement every day. And so I want to bring up several things that are points that I just run into that seem like that they really should be addressed. And the first one is effective questioning. Most guys will just, as I mentioned earlier, they'll just show up and jump right in and start giving a sales presentation. And they really don't know who the decision makers are. They really don't know much about their. They don't know what the real need is. They don't know what the desires are of that customer. They don't really know what outcome that customer's looking for. And if you think about it, you know, lawyers do that. Lawyers, they don't just jump up when you hire a lawyer. He don't just jump up and say, okay, let's go to court. They sit down and they do a little discovery and they gather up some information. He asks a few questions. He puts together a little game plan before he goes to work for you. You go see the doctor. When you walk into the doctor doesn't, you're sitting up there, you know, with your feet dangling on the little tissue paper thing and the doctor doesn't immediately walk in the door and grab a scalpel and go to work on you. He does a little diagnosis and he'll ask a few questions and he'll go through some of those basics with you to get a little game plan and try to figure out what's up before he goes to work on you. So as salespeople, we at least need to do a little 2 or 3 minute interview with our customers and gather some information. And so it takes me back to you might remember the name from 10th grade literature in school, Rudyard Kipling. You know, you probably don't have a picture of this guy on the wall at home, but this guy was a poet, and he wrote a lot of stuff. Matter of fact, he's the guy that wrote Jungle Book that Disney picked up and made a great kids movie out of. My grandkids love to watch Jungle Book. But Kipling wrote a poem over 100 years ago that when I heard it, it just always has stuck with me. And what he said in this poem, he says, "I keep 6 honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names were what, why, when, where, how, and who. I send them over land and sea. I send them east and west. And after they've worked for me, I give them all a rest." And what this guy realized, he never sold anything in his life. I don't know what he wrote that in context of, but I just thought that was a genius little poem there relating to the sales business. That those are the serving men that we need to send out there to help us get the job done and to help us accomplish what it is that we want to do. And a lot of times we fail to do that, and that doesn't get emphasized a whole lot in our sales meeting and in our get-togethers. You know, we're always talking about, you know, the latest and greatest product or piece of equipment that's just come out, and so we want to give our guys, you know, a few features and benefits about that, and we look at the little rap sheet that the manufacturer sent out or the vendor sent out, and we talk about it. It's, okay, guys, let's go get them, have a good day out there, and we just never, we don't have the time to get around to doing that, and so that happens to us a lot, what I try to do in that area is I spend a lot of time, and I've written a book that some of you saw yesterday, and I'll share a little bit about that before I say amen and sit down. down this morning, but in that book and in the training that I still do, I spend a lot of time focusing with folks on what to do on the front end, because I have people that will contact me and they'll say, Doug, I need help. I'm having trouble closing. And almost every time when I sit down and I begin to talk to them, I find out that when they say they have a closing problem, what they really have is an opening problem. Is they really didn't gather enough information up front. They really don't know enough about their customer. They really don't know what the outcome that customer really wants. Didn't know who the decision maker was. And they ended up trying to sell a one-legger, which didn't work, never works. And so I spend a lot of time in that particular area of trying to teach effective questioning with folks. It reminds me of the salesman that was out canvassing one day. And sometimes we don't have any leads. We got to go out and knock a few doors or dial for dollars or whatever we got to do. We have to pay the bills. So this fellow was out doing a little canvassing, and he walks up to a door. Here's a kid sitting on the stoop there on the step of the porch of the house. And as he walks up, he asked the kid. He said, "Is your mama home?" And the kid said, "Yes, sir." And so he knocks on the door. Nobody comes to the door. He knocks again. Nobody comes to the door. He looked down at the kid. He said, "I thought you said your mama was home." He said, "Well, she is, but this ain't where I live." So I think you kind of get the point. Sometimes just the lack of asking questions or lack of asking the proper questions keeps us from being able to accomplish what we want to accomplish. So that's one area of weakness that I found, and again, found it in the food sales business. I found it in the financial services business, and it's in this industry as well. And so that's an area that I sort of have a passion for, and I really try to dig into and spend time with people.